Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst, from swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guest house overlooking the Pacific Ocean. The Foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to support the conservation and restoration of Hearst Castle while offering youth programs for underserved students. Discover how you can become a member by going to foundation@hearstcastle.com and learn how you can support this unique and invaluable mission.
My name is Nick Jones. My wife is Jada Jones, and we are a hen house. We are in Leaper's Fork, just outside of Franklin, Tennessee.
Which is not too far from Nashville, right?
Just south of Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you're an import, right? You're fairly new here.
Yeah, moved here from the Napa Valley a little over a year ago.
And what were you doing in Napa?
Well, I was the executive chef for a restaurant called Goose and Gander in St. Helena.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yet somehow, some reason, you made a major life shift.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
What drew you away?
I think we just wanted a change, and California's just kind of become a little bit too expensive for us over the years, and so we bought a home here. My wife and I, Jada, we bought a home here in Columbia, Tennessee, which is south of here.
How far away, how long does it take you to drive?
About 30 minutes, and it's maybe 25 minutes from Franklin, so it's kind of a triangle, if you will.
And a fairly pain-free commute.
Yeah, it's a beautiful commute out here to Leaper's Fork.
Because you're driving on back roads and
really cool farms. It's gorgeous out here. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful drive.
Let's roll back in time.
Sure.
How did food and culinary world resonate with you? How did that happen?
I think it started at a very young age. I got my first job in the kitchen at a camp in Catalina Island.
Wow.
And so I was doing dishes and a little bit of prep, and I was very young. I was 16, 17 years old. My mother kind of talked me into going to culinary school because she saw it was something I was passionate about and said, hey, you know, there's a really cool culinary school here in Pasadena. You know, would you be interested in taking a look at it? And so I did. I started culinary school right before I turned 18. I graduated in high school a little early.
So you owe your mom, huh?
I do. Yeah. I do. I owe her for a lot. She's a good mom. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think food was definitely, my mom was a big part of that inspiration. Just haven't seen her, you know, cook for us and the smells in the kitchen and really early memories of my grandma, which passed when I was fairly young. But just the smell of Italian food cooking in the kitchen was it's pretty neat. So.
What dishes come to mind when you recall? Do you have a go-to?
My comfort food from my mom from childhood.
Yeah.
Well, chili for sure. Mm-hmm. The chili that she would have going, you know, in the crock pot waiting for us when we all got home from school and the house smelling like chili. I mean, that was awesome. But she's an Italian, so spaghetti and tomato sauce and Italian sausage and things along those lines, too, are a big part of our...
So... You graduate from culinary school, then what happened?
Well, while I was in culinary school, I got introduced to, I took a job at Spago Catering in LA, in Hollywood. And I think that job, putting that job on my resume, was kind of the start of my career. Mm-hmm. I started being able to land jobs. Of course, I went from there and I started going, I worked at a couple hotels and did some line cooking stuff. Some
in
short
LA
order.
Area.
Actually, I moved up to Northern California at that point. After I graduated, I moved up to Northern California. And
what drew you up to Napa?
Well, there was my externship, the place that I chose, which was out in Placerville, California. It was just something that I had a connection to, and I ended up going up there, finished my externship, and then I went to work at the Sheraton Grand in Sacramento. And so that kind of kept me up north there. And from there, I kind of jumped around different places in Northern California and finally landed in the Napa Valley.
So when you landed in Napa Valley, what were you doing? You went right to work?
I went there to study wine.
Okay. What did you think you were going to do with wine?
Well, I had already been in the culinary industry for a pretty long time, mm-hmm. working as a chef. I was up in Humboldt County, ran an Italian restaurant up there. So I was the chef de cuisine at a place called Abruzzi. Decided, I've always had a passion for wine, and decided that I wanted to make a change and go to the Napa Valley and study wine. So I ended up going to...
How did you think you were going to apply that knowledge?
You know, I think for me, the biggest thing was being able to be a really well-rounded chef and understand beverage and food, which not a lot of chefs could say they have that knowledge. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's definitely a good share of them out there, but I thought that that would really kind of set me apart to be able to go study wine.
Would that imply becoming an expert in wine pairing with different dishes?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so it actually, just being in the Napa Valley, it kind of happened naturally. You started getting involved in wine dinners and pairings, and so I used that knowledge for sure for pairings. But I would say that the biggest things that I had learned from that, from going to school there, was how much beverage influenced food throughout the history of...
And it's interesting, too, because you're talking about Italy, for example. France and Italy, wine is food. You know, it's a part of your lunch.
Absolutely.
Your dinner, everything. A lot more so, even to this day in America, don't you agree?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Interesting. But you had to drink the wine in the day because the water would kill you.
That's right. And that was a very interesting thing. That it's like, well, you had to drink wine and beer, you know, because that was the only way you're going to get hydrated.
Yeah. Without getting salmonella.
Yeah, whatever, exactly. Yeah.
Talk to us about your growth and learning curve when you were in Napa.
Yeah. You know, when I got to Napa, I started getting introduced to the farm world, to agriculture. Mm-hmm. Worked for a company called Farmstead at Long Meadow Ranch. And we had a big farm. We raised cattle and livestock. And so with that, I started learning a lot about preserving and the seasons and, you know, having a bigger respect for the food that we're serving and where it's coming from. I even got into the charcuterie world out there, so that's kind of where I got my niche, was I started making charcuterie, whole animal butchery, and set up a charcuterie program for Farmstead. Ended up setting one up for Goose and Gander. Ended up traveling all over the country and learning from other charcuterie chefs.
Wow.
Which that was really cool for them to send me to different places.
Yeah, no kidding.
But, yeah.
So, definition of charcuterie and the charcuterie board, because it is, it's a panoply of different items.
Yeah. For me, I mean, I think the main thing about charcuterie is, and it's the meat, right? So it's the curing of the meat. And with that, you know, having a good, starting with a good product, knowing where the animal comes from, or the hog, whatever it is that you're curing, and then from there, knowing how to do it. And then from there, it's about what you're serving it with and having, you know, the acid of the mustard and some and the pickles to kind of cut through the fat, you know, having some bread along with it.
So you almost need to have a little concierge with you.
Yeah.
To navigate you through. You
yeah, know? Absolutely.
Because nobody, you know, when they bring a charcuterie board, nobody explains it. It's just...
They just drop it off sometimes. Yeah. They don't talk about it and like how they make it or what it is. And a lot of times with a lot of restaurants, they don't even know themselves, you know, because they're just buying it and slicing it up and putting it on a board. They're not going to be able to tell you what hog it was, mm-hmm. you know, whether it was Berkshire, Duroc, or Mangalista. You know, they're not going to be able to tell you that. They're not going to be able to tell you that there was a certain type of wine that they used in that salami, or how long the prosciutto or ham was aged for.
Was that something that your servers would do?
Absolutely. Yeah, there was definitely an educational piece to our charcuterie board. They all knew whether it was a certain type of meat or a certain type of wine. When I was doing it for Long Meadow Ranch or Farmstead at Long Meadow Ranch, we were a winery. So that was pretty cool to be able to use our wine in the salamis and say that. Then also just whether it was garlic or something along those lines from the farm.
Perpetually, temptation was a part of your motivation because you moved on, right?
Yeah.
What drew you into the restaurant in Napa?
As far as like Goose and Gander goes?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I think, well, I was already in the restaurant over at Farmstead, mm-hmm. but I ended up branching out and doing more stuff over at Farmstead. We were doing live fire, lots of whole animal cooking and stuff outdoors. Mm-hmm. I think just that it was such a small community, you know. I knew the owner of Goose and Gander. I knew the general manager of Goose and Gander, and I think it kind of happened over a barbecue. You know, we're sitting down having a barbecue together, and the general manager at the time was like, hey, we need a new executive chef. Would you be interested in being our executive chef? And I was like, yeah, that sounds good. Let's do this. That's, you know, funny. So
it's a lot of random adventures in your life. Huh? Yeah. So how long did you stay there?
I was at Goose and Gander for 5 years.
Mm-hmm. But at some point, again, temptation came and you made a big change.
Well, I think a big part of it was COVID. We had to close the restaurant a couple times. We closed it for 4 months during the wintertime. And that's when my wife and I started looking out here. And I ended
up. What first attracted you here?
We had a calling to Tennessee. There was a few things, but we ended up coming out here and just kind of, it was Nashville in particular. We kind of looked a little bit in Knoxville, but wanted to be not in the city. Mm-hmm. We still wanted to be somewhat in the country, a smaller town. And so we just started looking all over the place. We drove through Leaper's Fork and fell in love with Leaper's Fork. We said, how could we be close to this area? Mm-hmm. And we came across Columbia and we're like, okay, this works. We love Columbia.
So you have a food truck?
We do.
And that's your restaurant now?
It's mine and my wife's business. It's a husband and wife team. We started it primarily because let me go back real quick. Mm-hmm. I took a job as an executive chef in Nashville for a big catering company. Great people, but I wasn't happy. I was commuting a long distance, about an hour each way, every morning. That's not something I'm used to doing. So there was that piece of it, but then also the piece of it, we're doing backstage catering for the Ryman and Grand Ole Opry and stuff like that. And I just lost that type of food that I was doing, and I needed to get back into it. When we moved to Tennessee, my wife was pregnant at the time, and she likes to eat very healthy and organic. And we moved to Columbia and we had a really hard time finding anything that was, first of all, organic was almost, you know, obsolete. And there's some stuff around, but you almost have to go a little bit closer to Nashville. And that, and then everything was Southern cuisine, you know. And so we saw a niche and we weren't sure how people were going to respond to it, but we went ahead and bought a food truck, pretty awesome food truck. And we said, if we're going to do it, we're going to do it right. We're going to get a really nice truck.
But in that process of figuring out what to do, did you think about maybe doing a brick and mortar physical location?
Yes. And we still plan to. It is on our radar. It's just kind of when the time is right.
Right.
There will be a farm. There will be a restaurant. It's just finding the right place. So this is kind of a great start getting our name out there.
Probably one of the advantages of your food truck is that mobility.
Absolutely.
You can follow the crowd.
Oh, yeah.
We talked about the Christmas parade.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, I just did an event. I mean, if you look at the truck right now, it looks like it was off-roading because we were out at a farm doing a Christmas party in the middle of nowhere. Well, you know, if you look at the front of the truck, it says farm to truck. And I'm starting to think that it's not only just farm to truck, but it's truck to farm. Because we could take it anywhere. We could do a 5-course plate of dinner for 50 people in a barn.
Wow. Out of the
and
food
truck. And we
have. Truck. Out of the food truck.
Yeah.
I love it. But you do have a prep kitchen, a physical.
Yes, setup, we do. Downtown Columbia.
And you need that, right, as your adjunct?
Yes. Yeah. We need it for the most part. We do a lot of the work on the truck, but the kitchen comes in handy with just having a location for deliveries, for a place to do a little bit of extra prep work, extra refrigeration room, things along those lines.
In the traditional cuisine, culinary, physical destination, that kind of theatrical entertaining is an intricate part of a successful restaurant.
Absolutely.
But that's minimalized in your world. I mean, you don't have wait staff that are
going
to tables.
No, you don't. But we do sometimes when we're at an event, right?
Right,
so
right.
Our catering side of things is you do have that piece of it. Mm-hmm. And then.
But it's more fast-paced.
It is fast-paced, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, a food truck is fast food, essentially, right? Like, it's, I mean, our food's a little bit different than fast food, I'll tell you that. You know, it's pretty fancy for a food truck, but in a way, it kind of falls into the same category, right? So somebody's coming up, they're getting their food fast, and they're going and they're taking somewhere, and they're going to sit down and eat it. You don't have the full service restaurant.
Interesting, huh?
Yeah.
And in a sense, there are probably some stressors that are eliminated for you.
Oh, yeah.
It's more efficient process.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
What would symbolize your cuisine? You know, what are the signature items that people think of when they first think of you?
Yeah, with the food truck itself and what we serve on the truck, I'd say the two biggest things that we kind of, we say we are is farm-to-truck concept. We're trying to use local and organic as possible. This is not California, so things don't grow year-round as long of a growing season as they do in California. So we, you know, we're kind of in the, we're in the winter time. So we are trying to do our best to source as locally as possible. But obviously we can't do that 100%.
And again, what would be a signature
dish
item? Yeah, yeah. That people,
our signature dish that will never change that's on there is our brick cooked chicken. The chicken that we do is, it's local. We rotate it through some farms. Currently right now that's on the truck is Taylor Family Farms, and sometimes we're using True Blue, and which both of them are local and very sustainably raised. As well as, so like our other dishes are like patatas bravas is a huge dish that's probably one of our biggest sellers, and they'll never go away because of that. But it's smashed fingerling potatoes that we deep fry in extra virgin olive oil. And then we top it with like a smoky tomato sauce and a lime aioli and some green onion. And so it's kind of a, our spin on a classic tapas dish.
That's really cool. Talk to us about what's closest to your heart, what propels you and motivates you in the culinary world. Why do you do what you do?
I think as far as the company goes, my wife and I, our mission is to have a healthier cuisine for people in Middle Tennessee. It's something that we see that's needed, and we think that we could make a change by bringing something that's healthier to Middle Tennessee.
Talk to us about the vegan trend.
Absolutely. The nice thing about our truck is we cater to a lot of dietary restrictions, different types of trends, vegan, vegetarian. So most of our food on the truck, if it's not already gluten-free or vegetarian, then it could be made that way. So, you know, we do this brick cooked chicken, of course, you know, but our beets and goat cheese salad, take the goat cheese off there and it's vegan.
Do you have people come up and that's
Yeah,
thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And then also, like, we cook with a lot of extra virgin olive oil versus butter. I'm a big fan of extra virgin olive oil. It's delicious. It's good for you. Mm-hmm. It's great for cooking, but it's also great for finishing. So we finish a lot of our food with extra virgin olive oil, but we also cook with it as well. I think there's a misperception that, you know, you can't really cook with olive oil because it has this low smoke point. But, well, we deep fry with completely extra virgin olive oil. A lot of people will tell me that's crazy, but we do, and it's a cost that is definitely costly for us, but to me, our food tastes better, it's healthier, and we run it at 350.
Okay.
And so it doesn't smoke because we're not hitting that smoke point, and it tastes a lot better, and it's a better product for you. So we have a lot of people that come up to our truck that's concerned about different types of oils. That's definitely a big thing right now for diets and dietary restrictions. So we try to cater to that as much as we possibly can as well.
And butter?
And butter, yeah. We rarely use butter.
So in a way, your extra virgin can be a gentler replacement for
butter. It is. It is a gentle replacement for butter. Mm-hmm. In fact, on the truck, there's not anything on the truck that we currently use butter for or gluten for. But we do that stuff for catering events, right? Mm-hmm. So when we cater, we'll do what the guest wants and stuff. But we still stay true to our style as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, at that point, we have fun. And, you know, like dessert might be like a, you know, our dessert a couple nights ago was a spiced apple and bourbon bread pudding, you know. So, yeah, definitely doesn't fall in that realm of, you know, no butter, no gluten. But, you know, we still do that stuff for our plated dinners and stuff.
Going forward in your world, do you ever wake up middle of the night and visualize a second food truck?
It's been a thought, for sure, but I think that you probably see a brick and mortar come first.
But possible.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's the legend and the empire grows.
I don't think you'll ever see three. We're not going to branch out and do, you know, we're going to still stay true to ourselves and do. If we had a second one, it would probably be because it's going to be a smaller truck for reasons of getting to places that need a smaller truck.
Mm-hmm. To learn more about your world, where would you direct us?
Well, our website is henhousetn. Our Instagram handle is henhousefoodtruck. Yeah, my name is Nick Jones. My wife is Jada Jones, and we are Hen House.
I love it. Thank you so much for sharing, man.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure, Tom.
Now you made me hungry.
Well, let's go eat.
Yeah, really. And I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Leapers Fork, Tennessee. We'll see you here.
Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst, from swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guest house overlooking the Pacific Ocean. The Foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to support the conservation and restoration of Hearst Castle while offering youth programs for underserved students, preserving the past and inspiring future generations of dreamers. These children experience a world of science, technology, engineering, art, and math at Hearst Castle, STEAM, along with studying the legacy of Julia Morgan, one of the most important women in the history of engineering and architecture. The Foundation at Hearst Castle not only changes the lives of children, but also provides lifetime memories and unrivaled experiences for our generous donors and members. Discover how you can become a member by going to foundation@hearstcastle.com and learn how you can support this unique and invaluable mission. You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.